Hello, lifebookers from around the world. Jordan River here, back again with episode 2 of our homeschool startup series here for Parenting Month. Now, last episode, we were diving deep into premise and what we believe about education and taking control of the education of our children. And this second episode, we will be getting more into specifics, diving into strategy. And we have the two masters of homeschooling strategy on the line. My brother and sister, Jesse and Patrick Colhagen. How you doing today, guys?
Hey, Jordan. Hey, guys.
Hey. Thanks so much for having us.
We are super excited. We had so much fun on the first call.
Yeah, it was amazing. And this is just such an important topic. And we're just so honored to be on the journey with you guys. And we really believe that this stuff has the potential to not only change the course of the family unit, but has the potential to change the world. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely.
Thank you so much for letting your curiosity and courage lead you in the direction that your heart wants to go.
Thank you. I didn't really have time to express personally how much I look up to you guys as parents. When I think about who has influenced me and who I want to model myself after raising my kids, I definitely look to you guys. I don't know anybody who's put in more time and thought into the specifics of homeschooling curriculum, unschooling strategies, and really just the education and welfare of your kids from your personal responsibility perspective. So thank you guys. And I'm really excited about this, just like the listeners are.
Thank you so much, Joe. That means a lot.
Yeah, for sure. And sorry.
For sure.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, totally, Joe. And I just have to say, you are raising two incredible kids. We love your daughters so much.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I feel that they do make it easy, you know, sometimes on us, but I do appreciate that. I look to you guys. I look to, our parents, John and Missy. I look to a couple of people and say, that's how I want my kids to turn out. You know, independent, curious, educated. You know, we really talked about most of this stuff really, really well in the first part. If you haven't listened to it, go back and make sure to listen to that. Because I want to get into what goes beyond that, right? Because people identify with wanting to homeschool and they get excited about it. And maybe they're even ready to take the leap, but there's still this intimidation factor of what am I going to do? What am I going to do with the curriculum? What am I going to do for specifics? And that's what I want to get into today with these member questions.
Fabulous. Yep. Couldn't agree more. There are lots of hurdles people feel that they need to get over, and they're absolutely, it's absolutely possible to do that.
I am so ready for this. So let's just dive right in so we have enough time during this episode to our first question submitted by the Lifebook members. How do you judge the right amount of time of structured versus unstructured time to give to your children?
Well, we feel like the whole goal of homeschooling is freedom. That's our own personal, foundational value of homeschooling. And so the answer to that from us would be the right amount of free time is as much free time as humanly possible, whether it's structured or not, because it's absolutely possible to structure, quote unquote, structure your homeschool in a way that feels free, even though you're, teaching within your own parental structure. But I will say that, free time is where kids learn best, and honestly, where all people learn best. It's been scientifically proven that play is the most effective way to learn and to retain what you're learning. And that applies to adults, too, in what I would say we call flow states. So as far as we're concerned, the more free time, the better. But there are absolutely also, as parents, certain things that we want to sit down and teach our kids, or times that we need all the structure, in which case we try to make it as succinct as possible, because kids really truly do not need a lot of time, not nearly as much time as we've been fooled into thinking, to learn the fundamental lessons of academic schooling.
Right.
Just because they're spending 8 hours a day in school does not mean that that's maximizing their learning experience or potential in any way. And if you actually boil down how much time is spent in school learning new facts and practicing them, it's, minuscule compared to the amount of hours that they're spending sitting in that chair.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally use my children's energy as my guide. And I've noticed that they tend to, on the days that we do sit down and do academic learning, which isn't every day, I would say that it's probably most days when we're really in a structured rhythm, But we kind of waffle in between different styles and methods of homeschooling. And sometimes that includes unschooling and just being free to learn through life. But if we're in a phase of sitting down and having structured academic learning, I use their energy as my guide. And I've noticed that they usually start to fade around the 1.5 hour mark. So that's about how much we do in terms of formal sit down time. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's not even that much. And that actually shocks a lot of non-homeschooling families or new homeschooling families, because they're so conditioned to think that kids need like a full-time job of school. But yeah, you just have to realize how much time is being wasted in traditional schools. And also that once like we're done with the quote-unquote sit-down learning, what are the kids doing? They're off reading. They're playing guitar or writing poetry or gardening or cooking or learning how to drive. Like everything they do is educational. They're always learning. It's all school. Mm-hmm. The learning doesn't end when we close the book, you know, it actually expands into every corner of our lives. So to us, free time is the whole point in answer to that question.
Wow. Right.
Do you have anything to add?
That's a great answer. Yeah, I would just say that the structured time is hopefully supposed to inspire the playtime. You really want it to bleed into what they're doing in their free time. So it's nice to have a structure. Kids do need boundaries, you know, they need a place to play within. But that's kind of how we use it, right? I mean, it's kind of like, you know, we're with our structure, we're casting a line in the water, we're fishing.
Right.
And then as soon as the kids grab it, it's mm-hmm. just like, they're off to the races. We can go down rabbit holes. We can, you know, do a million things within the structure that we've created. So mm-hmm. it's structure, but it's seriously loose. When they catch it, it's like off to the races.
That's a really good point. And just because, like you said, it's structure doesn't mean it's constricting. And just because it's unstructured doesn't mean that you don't have some influence. Like the environment in which you put your child to be unstructured will determine what they gravitate towards. You choose Absolutely. What's around them. So I love this
idea. Very intentional.
Yeah, I love that idea of like, I don't know if it's blurring the line between structured and unstructured or just being more fluid and flexible, but I really do like that approach.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that actually leads perfectly into the next question, another great one. How do you approach structuring and organizing your week, your month, your year? This is important, what's on the calendar, regardless of how you do it. How do you schedule it out?
Yeah, I'll take this one because this is my job. Generally, yes. Yeah, I run this.
You run the schedule? Yeah, totally. Just
so
like
yeah,
my wife.
Like we were just talking about. So to me, like being a type A, type 1 personality, structure is super, super important to me. And I literally can't live without spontaneity. So it kind of just piggybacks on what we were just talking about. We need in our homeschool to have a plan and an organized approach to things. And have a ton of flexibility built in for freedom and spontaneity.
Oh, I love that.
So honestly, our homeschool is just flowing between those two things at all times. In general, I tend to go really heavy on planning our annual curriculum. So I get really excited. It's usually like, well, you know, I'm making notes and gathering resources all year long based on what's inspiring me throughout the year. And then I get really excited about springtime for the new year. And I start to go hard at like, you know, the heavy lifting planning for the upcoming year. And then we have like a little bit of a summer relaxation time. And then right before the school year starts, I get back into heavy planning and really think down and plan kind of all the subjects for both kids, like everything that I would love to read and watch and experience based on our shared family interests at the time. So I'll use that time to plan like I said, every single subject that I'd like to cover. And sometimes that's individually focused. Like for our teenager, she'll take certain things that our son, who's only 10, you know, isn't ready for yet or doesn't have mm-hmm. interest in. And sometimes it's shared family stuff. So that just depends. But I'll take that time, that planning time, to think down all the different things that we want to be doing, gather all the books and materials. Or if we don't want to spend all the money up front, I'll just get the first couple months worth of materials. And then we just dive in and we use the annual plan in a way that's really flexible. I used to do it so that I would break the annual plan up into a 32-week school year plan, and then we could just follow it weekly. But we have since stopped doing that because we almost never stick with the plan. Mm. And there's many different reasons for that. So one of them might be that, you know, life is just happening and we just don't get to that sort of sit down academic learning that day or whatever. And so it gets pushed back and then everything else follows suit. And then we have to adjust the plan anyway. Sometimes it's because the kids aren't interested at all in what I've planned. And it's like, why would I force them to sit through something like pulling teeth if they're not enjoying it? That there's no point. That completely contradicts the whole essence of what homeschooling is to us. So we'll scrap the plan and start with something new. And, you know, pivot towards something that we're all more passionate about and that we can all get behind. But truly, like, the most common reason that we don't follow the plan that I do, or that we don't follow it in the time that I, you know, premeditate and think that we're going to be doing it in, is because we move more slowly through the curriculum than I've planned, because we're going down what we call rabbit holes. So there's nothing that we love more in homeschool. There's nothing more magical, we think, about the homeschooling experience than learning about a subject and having your kids just light up and ask you a question about it. And then you go research that question so that you can answer them. And it just becomes this like total obsession where you're all just like completely devouring this information. You have a dozen more questions and now you're out on a whole new branch of topics that you're learning about just for the pure joy and curiosity of it. And that can go on for days, weeks, months. We've had it go on for an entire year with our Greek mythology unit. Wow. I planned like a month and a half's worth of Greek mythology and we're still learning it 18 months later. Like, the kids just love it. And so we just keep on it. So that's anyway, really long great. Story short, I create the general plan for the year because that's what I like to do. And then we loosely let it guide us in whatever direction our hearts and minds want us to naturally go. And we may not always follow, you know, the quote unquote plan. But we're still spending the same amount of time learning a certain subject. And because the kids are actually unknowingly letting their passion lead the way, they're mastering it on such a deeper level.
Wow.
And so, yeah, we really try to strike the right balance between freedom and structure for our family. And we're going to go deep into that, into the workshop too, because I think that's something that a lot of parents fear, but it's actually so much more easy and it comes so much more naturally when you just trust that. Yeah, just put your trust in the flow of your homeschool, because it'll take you where you need to go.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and put your trust in the curiosity of your child. Maybe we can just tease, because like you said, the workshop's going to go way deeper working with these parents to actually create specific curriculums. But maybe we could just get a sneak peek. I loved the Greek mythology that you mentioned. Can you give us maybe another example of a theme that you embarked on and maybe ended up changing, or just a specific subject that really took you guys far?
History is always the answer for us. Mm-hmm. Our family loves history and we can go down rabbit holes forever with it.
I know you guys went big on Japan. One of the times I came over to visit you guys, you had maps of Japan all up on the wall and different prefectures, which I did not know at the time. And your kids had colored them with, you know, local indigenous trees and birds. It's pretty mm-hmm. amazing stuff to see.
Yeah. And let me just say, it's funny you bring that up, because Jordan, you totally inspired that in our family.
Oh, that's right.
It was your love of sumo. And then you got Johnny into sumo and started watching. Oh my gosh.
Oh, now he's enamored by Japanese culture. Oh, yes. Everything Japanese.
Ever since we sat down with you and watched sumo, he's been obsessed with Japanese culture. And so, of course, it just works its way into our homeschool.
Wow.
And yeah, we did a unit study.
I would say that's the best way to go to answer your question. Like, if you really want to get lost in something, unit studies are amazing, because all that basically is, as you're saying, we're going to learn about this one thing. And within this one thing, we're going to cover as many subjects as we possibly can. We're just going to go deep into the topic instead of the subjects. You're not saying we're going to do this for math and this for science and this for history and this for English. You're learning about just Japan mm-hmm. or Greece wow. or, you know, whatever, American history or whatever it is. And you're going to cover all subjects within that one lesson. And it just becomes this natural experience of learning. The kids don't even feel like they're quote unquote learning. You know, you're just having fun and exploring a topic. So
that is, I didn't know that was called unit study. That's exactly what I'm talking about. And I think that that's going to be a very attractive strategy for a lot of the parents out there looking to build their curriculum. Unit studies. Very, very interesting. Yep.
Big for us. We love them.
It's really cool.
It's a fun way to learn.
You're passing down cultures to your kids. You know, you're learning different cultures and you're passing them down. It's really, really special. I mean, I think Will Durant said, like, the whole idea of studying history is you're passing down culture to you know, the people that are coming after you, your kids, the next generations. Like, you're learning the best you can from those that came before you, and that's what people do in history. They take the best and they pass it down. Right. And that's what we're doing.
And I would venture to say that that's the definition of education. Exactly. In general, like, you're teaching your kids the things that they need to know to thrive in the current culture that they find themselves in. In our case, it's family culture and local community culture, as opposed to, like, you know, the systematic, industrialized, compulsory schooling culture. It's really important to define your family culture and your schooling culture.
Absolutely.
You know, clearly you guys have put a lot of thought into this, and I'm glad that it's culminated in a course, because this is really profound stuff, you guys. I love it. I've seen it for a while, but it's really cool to break this down. I want to make sure that we get to all of these listener questions, though. Don't want anybody getting left out. So if we may move on, kind of goes with what you were just saying as well. How do you make sure that your child doesn't fall behind when you're doing these types of curriculums?
This is the question that gets me kind of heated, because my answer is always behind what? Like, falling behind what? Behind public school standards? That's usually what parents mean, is behind public school standards. And the truth is, we're doing something radically different than what public school is doing, and you just can't even compare it. It's also important to note that those public school standards exist very specifically to give them a measure by which they receive state funding, which is all test-based. So the whole aim of public school in the first place is to get your child to test well, right, which does not equate to actually understanding the material or, more importantly, cultivating a love of learning. So, I mean, there are so many problems in my mind with quote unquote standardized testing, or just having standards for kids, expecting them all to reach the same benchmarks and milestones at the same time, when it's just completely developmentally unrealistic and unfair to put that on our kids.
It sucks. It's stressful.
It's so tremendously stressful.
It's so much more fun to take your kid as he is, as she is, and just celebrate the fact that they're different and their learning styles are different and their timing is different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like, why you homeschool?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Because ultimately, the public school is tailoring their education to serve the state, literally, right? To serve the funding of the school based on state standards, whereas homeschool is tailoring the education specifically to the child and the child's passions and the family's unique way of living. It's literally apples and oranges. You can't even compare the two. So, but, you know, that being said, I do want to say, because this is a super common fear that new homeschool parents have, and right, that I had to learn the hard way. Okay. I learned the hard way. We went through a few years of really rocky start to our homeschool because I held this conditioning in my mind, and I had to decondition my own idea of what my child should be learning by when. Mm-hmm. So this is actually a really near and dear topic to my heart, because I think it really helps to shape the atmosphere of the learning experience for better or for worse for a family. And the worst can be really, really painful for everybody involved. And I think just a lot of homeschool families have to experience it for themselves to learn it, you know? But we want to make it so that you guys don't have to, because exactly, if I could go back and do it over again, I absolutely would take back those stressful years. And so yeah, that's why we're actually going to be talking about this extensively in the workshop as well, and giving parents the tools that they need to just really trust that learning is such a natural process, and that there is no such thing as a rush to some imaginary finish line, and that when we can just get out of the way and stop forcing our kids to learn things on these made-up timelines, they will spend their time learning absolutely everything at a pace that's like true to their own journey.
Mm-hmm. That is exactly right. And I think that question is born out of our standardized system, like you said, and I hear like Lion Goodman's voice in the back of my head. Like, what does behind mean? What does fall mean? Like, these are all
dig deeper.
These are all just constructs that we really put on these kids that puts pressure on them. Let's be honest. You're failing. You have an F. You know what I mean? Like that. Those are things that probably make someone like Lion cringe to say to a little kid. It's way more pressure.
Oh, it's painful.
Than we realize. Yeah. And by the way, it's not reflective of their worth as a human being. So like,
that's exactly right.
Yeah,
it's teaching them to measure their worth by what other people deem important about them, or dysfunctional about them. Like, truly, we have to examine what that does to a kid's self-esteem and their love of learning, you know?
Exactly. I totally agree. But that question is clearly one that's on a lot of parents' minds, like you said. So I love the idea of just letting it go, and you'll see the results is what I would say. You'll see acquaintances and, you know, probably family members who have kids who are in the public education system. You'll see their health and wellness overall. And then you'll see how your child reacts to a situation where they don't have those pressures and how their health and wellness is. I think the proof will be in the pudding, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. It's incomparable, especially when it comes to, yeah, physical, mental, and emotional health. If we're talking about the well-being of a child, you just can't even compare.
Totally. And I do want to take another second to say we are going hard on this subject. Like we said in the last episode, we totally understand not all schools are created equally. We are generalizing here, but we do feel pretty darn strong about these topics. And largely across the board, these public schools have failed. You know, not all of them, you know, but largely across the board, they really have. That's how I feel anyways.
And we're not biased unnecessarily. Like, we've experienced both sides. So we can speak from both sides and say with experience that you cannot compare the two.
Yes, especially at a wide scale when you look at public schools in America. It's rather shocking. So let's continue to move on and answer these questions for these parents who are looking to get out of that system. The next question is, what is your philosophy on the role of technology in education? How do you protect your kids from the negative impacts of technology? It's a great question.
Yeah, technology can be a blessing or a curse. I think it all depends on how we use it, just like money, just like any neutral, you know, object. We use it very consciously in our home, but we do use it because I honestly can't imagine what homeschooling would be like without technology. I think the gods every day that I have the internet, because I just can't imagine being a mom, you know, in the 70s, having to learn everything from library books. It's such a blessing to have the internet. I know we would figure it out, but goodness, it makes learning so easy. It's infinite information instantaneously, and it's free. And I mean, there's just nothing better than that. So we're grateful every day that we can help our children find the answers to their most curious questions in like a matter of seconds, which of course it ends up taking longer than seconds because of those rabbit holes that we go down. It ends up being like, you know, one question leads to hours of discussion and whatever.
Right.
But that's the beauty of homeschool.
It's just a tool, and however you use it,
yeah,
that's what you get out of it. When you're using it for education, when sitting down together and using it for something that we're learning, it's amazing. But when your kids are using it by themselves, when they're bored, when they isolate themselves within the technology, I think that's when you get issues.
Yeah.
So when you use it as like an isolation tool, then you start to see problems with it.
Yeah, that's a good distinction to make. There's the time that we use it for school. Like I said, we absolutely do. But I will say, though, I much prefer to use books. We love like the real experience of reading a book. Like we'll, in the early morning, we'll light a candle, I'll bake some muffins, we'll brew some tea, and we'll sit down and just like read some chapters together in a book as a family. And there's nothing that compares to that. But that being said, we use technology in homeschool for things like podcasts, and we watch documentaries at lunchtime, and we, you know, research stuff and do certain programs and all that. So that's one thing, using technology for good for homeschool. Then there's the other side of it, which is literally teaching our kids how to have a right relationship with technology. Yes. On their own time, which is what you're talking about. And that's something that's really important to us too. So with our daughter, she's 16 and she's very self-aware. So we've talked to her like extensively about all aspects of technology, but including, you know, the negative aspects and consequences of the misuse of technology. And she's been able to really like set her own very healthy boundaries and have a great relationship with technology. There have been a few times where she's like stayed up late at night staring into the blue light of her phone and just like, you know, binging social media content or whatever, and awoken the next morning and told us, like, I feel absolutely terrible. I've completely connected the dots. I really feel the difference. And so she moderates herself, and she'll go entire days or even weeks, especially on vacation or something, without any technology whatsoever. She'll leave her phone behind or turn it off completely just to feel the freedom and then come back to it again. So we don't worry so much about her. We were able to teach her really through embodied experience, like how to notice how it makes her feel. Because I think awareness is the key for kids. Like, notice how it makes you feel and then adjust accordingly if it feels unhealthy. Our son, on the other hand, he's 10 and almost 10. And I mean, if we let him, he would probably play video games for like the majority of the day and watch movies and stuff. He loves technology.
He loves it.
But he also loves to read books and play games with toys, and he's super physical and he loves exercising and being outside. So, but he's the one that we have to watch out for. And I used to enforce a rule that he could earn his technology time with outdoor time. So as many hours as he spent outdoors is how many hours he could play video games.
That's amazing.
Yeah, because outside time is so important to us. And I feel like you're kind of counteracting some of the negative influences of technology 100%. If you're like in nature. But I stopped doing that because it felt like too much of a rule and something that I needed to track. And sure. It just didn't flow. And
that might work for some people, though. That's really interesting.
Yeah, like it was great for a little while. But what we ended up landing on now is we kind of realized that like he literally won't even think about technology, video games, movies, any of that stuff if he's occupied and engaged doing something that he loves with the people that he loves. Mm-hmm. So we really just try to engage both of our kids as much as possible. You know, we take family hikes, we go swimming in the river, we make crafts or art together, that we'll construct like play scenes for them to play with their toys or put on plays or whatever. But, you know, really it comes down to like, just being able to know where he's at and what he needs and having a felt sense as a mom of like looking at him and being like, are your eyes glazed over? Have you become a zombie? Is it time to, you know, cool it? And then I'll tell him like, dude, come on, it's time to put down the crack pipe. Like you gotta get off and do something else. And he does. So I would just say like, for the most part, the days that we're occupied the most and like together doing amazing things as a family, it doesn't even occur to him. So that's a long-winded answer. It's like we use it for homeschool for sure. We value it and we really try to moderate and enjoy it within our personal time, both.
As always, the Lifebook answer is holistic and it's balanced. And you have to find where you're comfortable on that scale. It's going to be different for everybody. But I do know that it's more of a balance now than ever, because if we're trying to educate our kids for what works in the modern world, I mean, technology is not, if they show interest in it, especially, I have to side with Johnny on this one, your son aforementioned, because I was like that and I ended up turning technology into my job and it's my passion and it fulfills me. Mm-hmm. But I also know that when I work too much at my job, the negative effects of the technology take a toll on my health. So it's literally like a balancing act for everybody. And the parents are the ones who need to sit in that driver's seat and decide where to take it.
That's exactly right, Joe. And I mean, it's probably taking you a while to figure out, you know, how technology makes you feel if you overdo it, right? Like you probably didn't feel that as a kid.
Yeah, exactly.
But
our parents forced us to go outside, though, I remember.
Exactly. But, you know, it's really cool to, like Jess says, if he has been on too long and he's like cranky and he's like, you know, getting mean or something, it's nice to remind him like, hey, you know, you just spent all that time on video games. How do you feel in your body?
Yeah.
Like, close your eyes. How do you feel? This is how it made you feel. Right. Remember that.
You don't even have to tell us. Just feel it.
And so I think that's how Maddie really developed.
For sure. But she's a little bit more, she's got a little bit more embodied awareness than he does. Absolutely. And she's older, so. Yeah, that's just kind of our dynamic right now. Ask us again in a year.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Things are always changing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's continue to move on here. The next question that we have submitted by a member. How do you handle extracurriculars and things like sports with your homeschooling curriculum?
Oh, man, this is like my jam here because I love playing games. I love coming up with games. And I love playing with the kids. So extracurriculars are like what I like to do most. Sports are easy. You know, if your kid is into a sport, if he wants to play baseball, get him in a baseball league.
Yeah, it's the that local easy. Y, or even through public schools, you can sometimes do hybrids, and we go over that in the course too. How to take advantage of your local resources.
I will say, even in the state that we're living in, it's funny. Our son got into archery. We never put him in any classes, but I was looking into it, and archery was pretty big here, and they used to have like a whole homeschool team that would compete against the schools around here, and they ended up they got rid of the homeschool team because they were too freaking good. I'm serious. Yes, the high schools started complaining that the homeschoolers were able to spend more time training And basically what they do now is if you're a homeschooler, you have to join a high school team. But before, the homeschoolers were taking all these competitions. And that's kind of how it is. If you fall in love with a sport as a kid, there's nothing better than homeschooling, because you get your homeschooling done in 2 hours, and then the rest of the day,
yeah, you devote to your passion.
Devote to whatever you're passionate about. So if you're a surfer, you're out in the ocean surfing all day long. If you're an ice skater, you're practicing, you know, so that's really cool.
Yeah. So we balance between finding things and creating things, I would say, because you're a master at creating the extracurriculars. You created a family band. We've got Dungeons and Dragons Club that you run.
Yeah, we got a band. We practice music. Johnny's playing the drums. Maddie's playing the guitar.
Maddie started film club. We've got a local homeschool PE. We have a nature group and a science club. I mean, we got teen coffee shop date. We've got all kinds of stuff. Some of it's other people have created, and some of it we've created.
And actually, a lot of it is spawned by the kids' interest.
Oh, for sure. That's totally what it's led by.
So when they say, "Dad, I'm really into," actually, it was Johnny's friends who came up and were like, "Hey, we're really into D&D. We would love to play." I was like, are you serious?
We need to back up, though, because we are a D&D family, and it's just now become popular in the mainstream because of Stranger Things. So these kids were watching Stranger Things, and now they're all interested in D&D, and Pat and I are just like on cloud nine, yeah, because we've been into D&D since forever.
Second edition.
So anyway, it's really sweet. There's a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
A lot of opportunity for that stuff.
That is really cool. And I love this idea of kind of flipping the extracurriculars on its head. What's the difference? Again, let's blur that line. Honestly, right, playing a team sport, you might walk away with more life skills than a lifetime of education in the public school system. Honestly, if you think about what it takes to succeed in the modern world, you know, thinking about others, playing on a team, playing well with others, you know, sacrificing yourself for a teammate, knowing how to follow orders, yet use your own discretion. That's what you learn in a team sport. And those things, a lot of adults get out of education and didn't go to a team sport, and they lack, and it cripples them for life.
Yep.
So I like that a lot, you know. Whatever the kid's most interested in, that should be the curricular, not the extra.
Exactly. Or you spend extra time on that curricular.
I love it.
We're always creating art in our house. It's just, it just flows, you know.
What about the socialization aspect, though? You know, this probably piggybacks on the extracurriculars, but this question here, how do you ensure that your kids are meeting others their age and building great social skills? Is that something you think about, age? And what do you think about socialization with homeschooling?
Yeah, this is actually a really huge one. It's probably, certainly one of the very top biggest fears that people have going into homeschooling, and for good reason. We totally get it. We've had incredible social situations, and we've had really difficult ones. But there's just a lot to cover here. And we're gonna cover it in the workshop too, because it's just so big. There's a lot to unpack in terms of our own beliefs about like what proper socialization is for kids in the first place. Like, are they actually even getting that in public school settings? I don't personally think so. And that's something that we can unpack together at another time. But the point is, socialization generally happens so much more naturally than we've been led to believe. Like, if I were to ask you right now, Joe, like, it'd be so silly to be like, how do you make sure that you stay socialized, Jordan? Like, it's just something that comes naturally through living your life, right? And it's no different for our kids. But instead of sitting in a classroom with 30 kids who are their exact same age, they're out in the world having conversations with elderly people in the park, or right, cashiers at the checkout, or little kids who are much younger than them who they've helped on the playground, and now it's turned into a game of tag or whatever. And we definitely see the value in getting same-aged kids together, which is why we've started a lot of these clubs that we do and do all these activities with our kids all the time, with their friends. But I think to have truly great social skills, we want our kids to be exposed to and like interacting with people of all different ages from all walks of life all the time. And actually, one of the single most common anecdotes that I hear from homeschool parents constantly is how blown away strangers are by their kids' confidence and outspokenness, yep, and just like willingness to hold on a meaningful conversation with an adult as a peer.
So true.
Like, most people are so used to kids just being like shy or authority intimidated or just staring at the floor or shutting down when an adult talks to them. But not homeschoolers. Mm-hmm. A homeschooler will engage you in a conversation right off the bat and like tell you, you know, all the details of the freaking machine that they built this morning or like, you know, what they're interested in and ask you questions. And it's right. a really beautiful thing. They actually have some of the best relationship and communication skills of all children, I believe, in my experience.
I couldn't agree more. I think that's the new archetype for homeschool kids. And if you think about it again, are we trying to prepare them for what it's like in the real world? I love this idea of putting them in the real world and yeah. then they learn how to communicate right off the bat. Because I believe, now this is just my belief, I am with you, that the socialization at school is not what is expected in real life. The socialization in school is, here's a bunch of people your same age, they're strangers, no mutual interests, now go up and say, hi, my name is this, and make friends. In the real world, you're placed amongst people who are either coworkers or have a mutual interest of all ages. And you know what I mean? It's not about, hi, my name is anymore. It's about connecting over things that matter, right? And being able to play well with others and have interpersonal relationships. So,
yeah, and honor diversity, you know, because in school, they don't get that. You know, if they're all the same age and you're all going through the exact same hormonal experiences and cultural experiences and you're all obsessed with the same shows and
media, for
all sure. that stuff, it's like socialization has literally started to mean to people the same thing as homogenization. Like if they're not following the pack and blending in, then they're antisocial or socially awkward. And it's like, no, we want diversity. We want our kids to know who they are and be different from other kids.
So true.
99 out of 100 times, if you put a homeschooler in a lineup with other schoolers, you're going to pick out that homeschooler.
Yeah, you'll know.
They're going to have
pink hair. You'll know just by what they're wearing. Yeah, like they're
the way they hold themselves is they are individuals for sure.
I love that. I absolutely love that. It looks like we've got two more awesome questions here submitted by members. Let's make sure that we have enough time for both of these. The next one here is preparing for higher education part of your approach in any way. Do you think about college?
We don't personally so far. Both of our kids are really artistic. Our teen daughter has been exploring the world of like film and theater and music and that stuff for the last 6 or so years. And so that's where she's currently thinking the direction of her life is going to go. And that to me, to her does not mean higher education. And she's not really all that academic to begin with, like meaning she doesn't like the experience of formal sit-down learning, test-taking, all that. She wants to like get out in the world and do it and be it and experience it for herself. And so not for her. And our son, like I said, he's only 10, so this could very easily change. But as of right now, I mean, he's an artist. And there are days when, no exaggeration, he will spend the entire day from when he wakes up in the morning until it's dinner time drawing, like literally all day long, just like cranking out drawings, comics, like whatever he's into. And he's talked in the past about actually wanting to find like an apprenticeship, like an old school higher education where he like apprentices under a master and is given like quests that he has to complete or whatever. So like if that was an option in terms of higher education, we'd be totally here for it. But if he decides that he wants to go to college, I have no doubt that he'll succeed at that, you know, because the truth is, the thing that most people do not know, which I love enlightening them to because it's really an incredible thing. And that is that homeschoolers often actually have a major advantage getting in to higher educational schools, universities, colleges, that sort of thing, which is something most people are not aware of. Though I do think that statistically homeschoolers are much more likely to become self-taught entrepreneurs than go to college, it does happen all the time and kids do fantastic. And we'll be covering that in the workshop too, because it's really incredible to see that these universities, it's like, what happens when the entire populace is now experiencing the exact same educational standards, learning all the exact same things? Like, what actually sets them apart? These schools are looking for different things now that homeschoolers can very uniquely fulfill if they're the kind of kid who wants to pursue that, right? They're free thinkers. They can critically think and think outside the box. They have great communication skills, like I alluded to earlier. They're highly creative. They tend to be really clear and passionate about what they're trying to achieve.
They know what they want.
They know what they want and they know how to teach themselves. They're quick learners. It's just incredible. And oftentimes more and more, these colleges are looking more at extracurriculars and like what you spend your time doing than grades. So that's really encouraging and really empowering, I think, for homeschool parents. But it's really so doable to get your kids into these schools and the stories about how they're doing it without like regular, sometimes you can do it without regular testing. Like they don't have the same requirements all the time because schools allot like a certain amount of placements for homeschool kids. They want homeschool kids and homeschool kids don't always have to jump through the same hoops as public school kids. So it's really inspiring to realize just how much these universities are embracing the unique qualifications that homeschool offers. So for us, it's not part of our plan right now, but we know a lot of people who have done it and have kids going on to become surgeons or creating book publishing companies or, you know, starting their own businesses or going to business school. And it can be done really, really well.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting thought because you can do this with the opposite in mind, right? Of this whole new paradigm. And, you know, my younger daughter's 1 year old. What's college going to be in 18 years and all that? Or you can, like you said, still include that as part of your vision. It's not mutually exclusive.
No, not at all. The sky's the limit with homeschool. You can do whatever you want if you put your mind to it. You just got to identify what it is and work towards it, just like Lifebook.
Exactly,
you know, have your vision, have your goal, and go for it.
It's awesome. Very, very empowering. This workshop is going to be just amazing. But let's make sure we address this last question here. I think it'll be an easy one. You know, with school, with regular school, there's so much that revolves around when there's not school. You know what I mean? It's like summer break, holidays, off days, half days. You know what I'm saying? How do you guys do like breaks in your curriculum, work in holidays or travel time?
We're just in perpetual summer mode, I think.
Endless summer.
Endless summer, yeah.
We do it however we want. I mean, like we said before, we like to have a lot of freedom and flexibility, not just in school, but in the way that we work and in our lifestyle too. So
there's no difference between our learning and our living.
Like, no, there really isn't.
We are just always doing it. So if we take time away from the academics and we spend, you know, 3 weeks on the road, going to national parks, do you think we stop learning at that point?
We might be learning more because out of our element, you know, and everything is new. And
learning at national parks is just one of the funnest things you can do living in this country.
Travel is such a huge part of the curriculum too, you know. So, I mean, it doesn't really matter whether you're taking a quote unquote break or formally learning, you know, both can be intentional and highly educational, even without the like sitting down to formally read out of a textbook, you know, taking place. So we take, but okay, that being said, like I said, we do have a structure that we try to follow and we're always flexible within that structure. But sometimes if we've been structured for a long time, you know, we'll feel like we need a break. And you can tell when everybody starts to get kind of dulled and things just don't feel as engaging and fun and happy as they usually are. Like that's an indication that it's time for you guys to take a break, in our opinion. And so we'll do that and we'll take a break for as long as we need to, as often as we need to, and then we'll get back on track. And when we do that, every single family member has so much more energy and enthusiasm about school and structure and work after, you know, a good rejuvenating time away. Sometimes it's just exactly.
And we're not kidding when we say that, like our 10-year-old will come to us and be like, hey, I think it's time we get back to.
Yeah.
To history. Yeah. Like, okay.
Like, I really want to learn about this,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
But you guys, like the most important thing to remember to us anyway, our belief is that homeschool equals freedom. So like in homeschool, you as parents, you're the principal, the dean, the teacher, like you get to decide, you get to make the rules. You're the author of your homeschool in the same way that you're the author of your life. So like I said earlier, the sky is the limit. Take as many breaks as you need. Your kids are still learning.
It's amazing. You guys are really an inspiration. I just want to thank you one more time for doing these two episodes here and also going on to do the workshop one-on-one with so many Lifebookers. That's going to be really, really cool in a small, intimate setting. Thank you guys for all that you do. Is there anything you want to say here before we wrap it up?
No, thank you, Joe. It's such an honor.
Yeah, thanks, Joe.
Yeah, and I just want to say thank you so much to the Lifebook members for listening. I just feel like this is so important and it's coming at the most important time in our lifetime. And we're just so excited to go deeper with you guys. For those of you that want more and are looking forward to joining the workshop, there's just so much to cover and it's so deep and so vast. And it's just such a joy. It really is such a joyful delightful, wholesome, amazing journey to take as a family. And we're just so honored to be a part of that with you. So thank you so much for having us, Joe.
Awesome. I cannot wait. You guys truly are the masters of this stuff. I know that probably, you know, makes you feel a certain way, but it's true. You guys really know your stuff. And this is really great education. So thank you guys. It's my pleasure. And thank you, Life Bookers, for tuning in today. This is the second part of the Homeschool Startup Series. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out that workshop and upcoming classes and workshops around this subject. This is Jordan River and Jessica and Patrick Colhagen signing off saying, have an extraordinary day, all you Life Bookers. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.